Thank you again so much for being here. I guess I forgot to mention, let's keep in mind all those affected with the storms. We're knocking on wood real hard to make sure our power didn't go out, because if it just looks wet outside, it seems like our power loses or goes away for a little while. But let's keep everybody in mind as we go through the next couple of days. Hopefully the aftermath, this is not going to be terrible or bad. All right, so we have been, of course, looking at this last week of the earthly ministry of Jesus. We went through, through all of the horrible things he had to endure. And now, as we turn our attention from the cross to the next 2 days or next 3 days, we focus on his burial and resurrection. We already spent some time looking at the burial, just with a couple of thoughts I wanted to put out there before we move on to Sunday. But as we were here last week, we talked about Jesus being put in the tomb, and then the Pharisees then coming behind because they knew what he taught about his resurrection, about a rising third day. They set the seal on the tomb to make it secure, and they also put a detachment of soldiers there as well. And so that's what we looked at last week, okay? And then as we close this segment out, we go into this last part here. Jesus says now, as he's coming near the end, we get to John 19. You remember what John 19 states? There's several statements that John records for seven statements that Jesus makes. And in John 19 and verse 30, right before he dies, what's his last statement according to John? It is finished. That's a short sentence, right? But it has so many implications to it. Well, what does he mean by that? What comes to your mind? What do you think he's saying when it is finished? Yes, ma'am.
I think you finally got to relinquish his suffering and be okay. Back with the Father.
So there's two elements to what she just said there that I don't want to miss. Number one, it brings to an end his physical suffering. But it also provides opportunity. Now, he's not going to go immediately. He's still got some time. But also that reunion with God is now in the near future for him. And not only that, now is he no longer bearing the burden of the sin, right, where God had to turn away from him. And so there's kind of multiple layers there when you think about the suffering and the loneliness that now that's over. I think that could definitely be one of the ideas that he's promoted or pursuing here. Yes?
He nails the Old Testament to the cross.
So if we go to Colossians chapter 2, verses 12 and following, what does Paul write about Jesus? He says that in the cross, he nailed to the cross what? That counsel, or the record of debt that was against us, the old law, right? That old law was finished. It had come to its completion. It had fulfilled its purpose in bringing men to Christ. And so in essence, that's many layers within that you could talk about, but it is the final stages of the law, of the Mosaic law, being in authority. It's no longer in authority, but now has been taken out of the way. The Hebrews writer talks about that a will and testament only comes into effect when? On the death of the testator, the one giving the testament. And that happened in this moment. Good thought. Anything else that you can see here, and it is finished?
Well, that motor fired up.
What was that, Michelle?
All that God had required of him.
All of his requirement, his work is done. I like that. I want to hold on to that. Hold on to that for just 1 second. I'll come back to that. All of his work was done. I think that's an interesting thought. Anybody else have anything other than that? So there are a lot of parallels in Scripture, a lot of shadows within the Old Covenant. We alluded to a lot, and I'm constantly fascinated how God long ago wrote about things that were occurring or pointed toward things that would come long into the future. This is one of those, I think. Notice the interesting parallel. If I go back to Genesis chapter 2, if I go to chapter 1, I read about all the creation that he did, all the work God did. And then when you get to Genesis chapter 2, and if we start at verse 2, what does the text say? Genesis 2:2, this is the English Standard. And on the seventh day, that's Sabbath, that's our Saturday, on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. He rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. I think that's a fascinating parallel. So you've got two kind of concepts here where you see God, Jesus, John tells us, was there at this. So when it's talking about God resting, that includes Jesus, by the way. They're known as the Word, not as Jesus yet. But the being who we would know as Jesus, also the Word, right? He rested from all his work in creation. And now you fast forward about 4,000 years, and you get to this day, and what does he say? It is finished. And it finally gives Jesus what? Opportunity to rest. I just love that. I think that's wonderful. He devoted himself completely and wholly to his work. What was his work? There's a lot of different ways we can define that. Luke 19 tells us that his work is what? Mm-hmm. To seek and save the lost. Yeah. Right? That's what he came to do. Right? John 3:16, God gave his only begotten Son that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. You know, you think about the work of Jesus, and he fully invested himself in it. And then finally, at the end of it all, he gets to work. I mean, he gets to rest. You know, Lisa and I were talking the other day. We had a really busy day. Well, y'all know this was a busy weekend. And when it finally got to get to bed, man, that felt so good. We felt, not us, but the whole group, we accomplished so much. Everybody got in, worked so hard. And when you get to the end of all that, you can rest peacefully because you know you fully invested yourself. And there's something wonderful about that. Yeah, Becky?
So maybe you just answered this question, but rest is something like we appreciate, we enjoy because we're tired, we're exhausted. Mm-hmm. But God is deity. So why would he be stressing that he has to rest?
Because he got to experience it as a human being.
Yeah, but in the creation, he spends two verses talking about he rested on the seventh.
And that's for us, I think. He rested. In other words, I think it's not necessarily in the rested ideal that we think of rested, but what does rested, the word, mean?
To complete,
right? To arrest from what you've done, right? I'm finished now. I'm not going to create anymore. I'm not doing any more creating. And now God lets things play out as it should. And at this point, Jesus is done with his work as Savior. So at this point, in that essence, he can rest. His work has come to rest. It is finished. It is what it is. He's not coming again to do that same work because it's finished. What does Jude say? Jude 1:3. I write these things that you may what? Earnestly contend for what? For the faith once delivered. When was it delivered? When Jesus came, when he died for our sins, when he was buried and rose on the third day. And so that work, his earthly ministry at this point is done.
So that means that now we can live
with abundance of life. I see it like that.
Because of what comes in 3 days, right? So those are my thoughts anyway. I like that concept that he has come to rest. And that's the same rest that awaits for us. What does Paul say to the Thessalonians? I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of those who have what? Gone to sleep or died. Right, and he goes on to say that in the resurrection they will rise first, right? But where are those good brethren? Well, they're at rest, the same as Jesus. All right, so any other thoughts before we move on? All right, so Saturday, Sabbath, is a day of rest. That's what Jesus is doing. Nothing else to do as far as his disciples or himself this day. So he is in the grave. And then Sunday comes, our first day, or their first day of the week, our Sunday. And this would be the day portion. So Jesus had been in the grave since when?
Friday
during the day portion, right? That's the day, not Friday evening. That was the day, that was our third. Yeah, so you're in the Friday. He died at around 3 on that Friday. He's been in the grave Friday, all day Saturday, and into Sunday. Now you're on the day part, the morning, if you're looking at Genesis chapter 1, the morning period. And that's where we are now. Let's go to Matthew 28. We have a lot to cover here, and we'll go through it as meticulously as we can. So let's go to Matthew 28 and verse 1. You'll note how, so I thought about how to do this. We're going to have to move around a little bit, but I want to read through a couple of these accounts, especially for this portion. So we'll start with Matthew, and we'll note what Matthew has to say, and we'll go to Mark. So Matthew 28:1. Now after the Sabbath, notice how Matthew is making a very deliberate statement. It's after the Sabbath, toward the dawn, so you're in the morning portion, toward the dawn of the first day of the week. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, and for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothing white as snow. And for fear of him, the guards trembled and became like dead men. They didn't actually die, they fainted. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen, as he said. Come and see the place where he lay, then go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead. And behold, he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. See, I have told you." So they departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy, notice the mixture of those two emotions, and ran to tell his disciples. And behold, Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came up and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me." So this is Matthew's account. Now, Matthew actually spends probably the least amount of time on this part. And so I want to read him, but we'll note probably more from the other Gospels. But let's talk about the other ones as well. So first, Matthew. So what do we note? What are some things we can note from the text here? So it's the first day of the week. It's Sunday. You also note that it isn't as though the angel quietly comes down, but there is some physical reaction of the earth, right? There's this earthquake as he's moving the stone out of the way. It's interesting, Jesus didn't move the stone, but the angel was sent to do that. Don't know any reason for that, other than just that's what it says, right? But from this text, do we know who came? Well, we know Mary Magdalene, but do we know, was there anyone else? Well, it says Mary, the other Mary, but it only gives us two. Were there only two women? Well, if you go to Mark 16, you'll know those were not the only two women to come. If you go to Mark 16 and verse 1, Mark lets us know that it was three women that came, at least three women that came. Mark 16 and verse 1, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, right? I believe that's the other Mary in Matthew 28, and then Salome. Now, who's Salome?
The wife of Zebedee.
The what?
Wife of Zebedee.
Who is that, though? How do we know them? What?
One of the disciples' mother.
Two of the disciples' mom. It's James and John. James and John. This is their mother, Salome. So there, Mark includes three women. If you look at Luke's gospel, Luke actually doesn't give us any of their names. He just says women. But then if you go to John, John notes that it was, he only notes Mary Magdalene. There's another one, and I don't know why I'm missing that. Let's see. I also had Joanna there as well. Maybe that is in Luke. Is that in Luke? Sorry, I didn't record that in my notes. I'm going to make sure I tell you right. Am I missing?
Verse 10 of Luke 24.
Does it say Joanna there?
Yeah. It was Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary the mother of James.
Thank you.
And other women that were with them, which told these things unto the apostles.
Yeah, so thank you, Becky. I knew I had it there somewhere. So you've got four in Luke's gospel. So you try to pull all these together. So well, you've got three named in Luke's gospel, but when you total them all up, you have four named women, but then Luke also says there are other women with them. So Luke says there are other women. So when you're looking at that, how do you harmonize all of that? When you've got John only giving us Mary Magdalene, you've got Luke giving us three names, you've got Mark giving us three names, but not the same names. And then you've got Matthew only giving us two names. How do you deal with that? If a skeptic comes to you and says, see, they're different, so it can't be right. How do you harmonize that? How do you deal with that question? Why does the Bible give us all these different lists?
It's the same thing that when you talk about Malchus, you don't read it in all four Gospels either. It's only recorded in one Gospel. There's another, conversion. You read a baptism in all of them on every occasion, but you don't read necessarily about confession or repentance and so forth.
Okay.
The apostles, you know, I don't know how much leeway they had, but obviously it was meant to read all four of them to get a total picture. I mean, if you were going to paint by numbers, some of the numbers weren't going to be in your first pile. You better look over here, you know, finish this thing out.
Yeah, so just because they're not in the list doesn't mean they weren't there.
Right.
So let's say that a few of us go to the beach, and let's say me and Van and Turner and Landon all decide to go. Let's go to the Panthers game, right? I'd go to cheer, I guess, but y'all'd go to cheer. I thought y'all would laugh. Thank y'all. Let's say we get back and Landon is talking to Aaliyah and he says, yeah, me and Turner had an awesome time at the game. But then Van goes and he's talking to Miss Lynn. He said, yeah, me and Landon and Brian, well, it was just an awesome time there. Now, would those lists necessarily conflict with one another? Why not?
Maybe you had fun with someone, but not someone else.
Okay, maybe that was it. Maybe you're trying to tell them something, right?
You're still talking about the same people.
Yeah. Huh?
You're still talking about the same people.
Yeah, and just because I list one person or two people doesn't mean I'm denying. Now, if I said, if we all four went, and then I said to Lisa, I was like, yeah, Van and Landon, it was just me, Van and Landon, if I can get my head right, we had a great time. That's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because what have I said?
You said there wasn't anybody.
I've excluded, right, everybody else because I specified this is the list. So that's the kind of things we have to look for. Does that make sense? And I only bring this up because this is one of those things that a lot of skeptics bring up, and I think it's an unfair attack, but we need to know how to answer it, don't we? When you're retelling, let's say something happened on a trip with a group of friends, and you're retelling a story, do you have to tell everybody that went on the trip with you? No. And would you tell the event the same way another person on the trip would sell it? Probably not. And so, how do we handle it then? So we get to this point, and what we do as good students is we look at all four Gospels, and we take all of them in, and then we can get a wider understanding of who was actually there. Now, do we know everybody that was there? No, but I can definitively say these four were Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and Salome. I know those were there, and I also know that there were other women there who are not named. Okay, so how big was the group? I don't even know that. But I know those four, so I can say that with some definitiveness. So they go, and what are they doing? They're going to care for the body, right? They're just doing what you would normally do with someone who's passed away and how you would treat the body afterwards. They go and they're shocked. And then you get into a discussion of what do they see? This is kind of important as we track through this. So we're trying to lay out the series of events. Stay with me, okay? Stay with the text. So, what's the first thing that happens when they go? The first thing they notice is the angels, right? The angels. If you go to Mark's Gospel, let me give you the right one. Go to Luke's Gospel. If you go to Luke 24. And let's just start at verse 1. I'm going to read down just a little bit. But on the first day of the week at early dawn, that agrees with Matthew, right? They were taking spices they had prepared, and they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body of Jesus. While they were there, while they were perplexed about this, two men, are these two normal men? No, stood by them in dazzling apparel, and it's later on we find out those two men were actually angels. So we have two angels there. They're there. These are the same angels that we see in Matthew 28, who did what to the soldiers? What's happened to the soldiers by this point?
They're fainted.
Yeah, they've fainted. So you can imagine if you're these women, you're walking up on this scene, it's not what you expect to find, and it's kind of chaos. I know Cy gets this a lot when he's going out to a scene, but he's kind of expecting that, right? When you walk up on a scene, he knows if I'm getting called, there's a high chance it could be something dramatic. But these women are going up, they're not expecting that at all. And so, if you can look with their eyes for a minute, what do you see? You're looking at the tomb. Number one, you note that the stone has been rolled away. That's a pretty big deal. So the stone's rolled away. You also note who's on the ground. The soldiers. Now, we don't even know for sure that they knew soldiers would even be there. Right? All we're given in Matthew 28 is that the Pharisees set these soldiers in place. We have no idea whether the women knew or expecting soldiers, but what they do see are soldiers on the ground. Now, if we're reading Luke, what's the first thing they do? They run into the tomb and the body's gone. And it's when they come back out of the tomb that what? They see the two angels. Now, we know what happened to the soldiers when they saw the two angels. They fainted. So this, what's the first thing the two angels say? If you go to Matthew's account, what the angels say is, in Matthew 28, verse 5, do not be afraid. They know there's a good chance they may fear may overtake them. And so they say, don't be afraid. And they, of course, let them know that Jesus isn't here anymore. So this is when things, when what happens next is kind of important for us moving forward. But just up to this point, you've got this group of women. They went to the tomb to do things to the body, but then they get there and it's not what they expect, and Jesus is gone. What happens after this? All right, this is when we got to look at every one of them. So if we go back to Matthew, what do the angels tell the women to do?
Come see where the Lord.
What now?
Come see where the Lord.
Okay. So, but then after that, what's their instructions to them? They say, go tell the disciples. So their instruction is they need to go tell the disciples to go to Galilee and that Jesus will meet them there. All right, so that's Matthew. Matthew didn't give us a whole lot. It gives us kind of an overview. If you go to Mark, he's similar. Mark chapter 16 and verse 7. Mark, the angels tell them, tell his disciples and Peter that he's going before you to Galilee. Very similar instruction. So they're told to go back and to tell the men. All right. Let's see. Anything else on that? Okay, so this is when things maybe can get confusing, and this takes a little time to study this. All right, so what exactly occurs afterwards? When you look at the three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're not real definitive in the actions that follow. John actually is more definitive at this point. So if you go to John chapter 20, and let's go there. John clues us into kind of what happened next. Okay, John chapter 20. So if we go to verse 1, John says, now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. And notice what she does. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved. So Mary Magdalene it appears from the gospel, is the first one to run away. The other women appear to stay there, at least for some time. I don't know if they say, Mary, you run back, or Mary just takes off running, or what. But she runs to go get the disciples, and she finds what two? Peter and John. Now, there's a reason for this. I'm not just saying that just because... okay.
All right.
So just keep that in mind. I'll come back to it and I'll explain that as we move forward. But I need to do some other things first. So Mary runs back. Mary tells Peter and John, Jesus is gone.
Well, the sepulcher didn't go away.
Huh? So she runs back. She tells them, okay. And then, if you go back to John, you see Peter and John's reaction. What do they do? If we go to John chapter 20, and let's go down to verse 2. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb." Now notice what she says, and this may clue us into how quickly she ran away. Notice what she says. "And we do not know where they have laid him." Does that give you a clue to when she ran?
Before she saw the angel.
Before the angels say to them, Jesus has risen, he's not here. How do you know that? Well, notice her words. What is she still concerned about?
Where his body is.
Where the body is, not where Jesus is. So it seems to imply from John's gospel that Mary, before the angels said to them, Jesus is risen, she's already gone. And she's hightailed it to the disciples. And it's the other group of women who stay there and hear that he's risen. So just kind of important. So she tells Peter and John, verse 3. So this is Peter's response. "So Peter went out with the other disciple, and they were running toward the tomb. Both of them were running together." But I love this. "But the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first." All right, so you've got Peter and John. Now, the reason I say this is John is because in John's gospel, this is the way he refers to himself over and over again, the one whom Jesus loved. He never identifies himself by name. Just want to say that. So John outruns Jesus to, outruns Peter to the tomb. But you notice that John stops. He doesn't go down in. Verse 5 says, "And stooping to look in, he saw the linen clothes lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb. He saw the linen clothes lying there, and the face cloth which had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who had reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to their homes." So you've got these two run there, and they see what's going on, but do they know yet Jesus is risen? But it does seem like John... something occurred to John that doesn't occur to Peter just yet. But John remembers something, and like he has some inclination. But notice, as of yet, none of those women have told them what they heard from the angels. So just keep that in mind. So what do Peter and John do now? So they went back. Okay, what about Mary though? What's going on with Mary? Mary Magdalene. It appears as though Mary followed them to the tomb. not as quickly as they ran, but she did go there. And I'll tell you why I believe that in just a minute. All right. Any questions so far?
What does this mean? And he saw and believed it. Then the other disciple who came to the tomb first went in also, and he saw and believed. That's a little confusing. Didn't the Bible say that he had to see
So they will get there, but that'll come later. So I think what it seems to imply to me is that John has some inclination of what this all means. I don't know that he has a full understanding, because it's saying it's going to come later, but he's beginning to believe, right? John knows there's something going on here that's bigger than they assumed. Good question. All right. I guess you can't help the time. So this is going to get really interesting as we move forward. I'll come back. We'll quickly review what happened. And then, but just as you see on the board, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and Salome, they come to the tomb. What do they find? Two angels there. They tell the women to go and tell that Jesus is risen. But do they tell everybody? No, Mary Magdalene has left at this point. She doesn't know yet what these women know. Mary goes to get... Oh, come on. She goes to get Peter and John. They run to the tomb. They find it empty. They don't find Jesus. And then Peter and John go back. And then... I don't know why I have that up there. Oh, okay, I'll talk about that next week. That'll be the last thing I talk about. So we'll see, we'll also see in all this what the Sanhedrin's reaction to. So that kind of gets us up to here. All right, go ahead, read those four Gospels. Read the resurrection accounts. That'll really help us as we think through these things. But again, good attention today. Thank you so much. We'll dismiss and be rejoined for our devotional in just a minute.